Hi, this is your host, Troy, coming at you at the beginning of this penultimate podcast of Welcome to the Slaughtered Lamb. I would like to, in advance, apologize for the quality of the audio at some points during this recording. I tried to do a live edit to speed along the process. Unfortunately, it sort of backfired with my microphone messing up on me, so there was a crackle pretty much at every single edit of the podcast. So just a little bit of a heads up, and again, an apology, but please try and enjoy. Welcome to The Slaughtered Lamb, a movies-by-minute watch of the John Landis written and directed 1981 horror classic, An American Werewolf in London. I'm your host, Troy, and I want to thank you for joining me on this journey. So it is now Thursday, and we are going to be talking about minute 96, the penultimate minute of this movie. And this is going to start with the special makeup effects crew and ends with courtesy of Warner Brothers Records. So as mentioned, we are in the credits now, obviously. We're coming up to the very end of the actual movie, and we have this listing of special effects crew. Which is a short but quite impressive grouping of people. There is 8 people on this list, and including the names of Ellen Baker, Steve Johnson, Doug Beswick, Sean McGrone, Kevin Brennan, Joe Ross, Tom Hester, and Bill Sturgeon. So just to elaborate on the amount of talent and skill that is actually in this small grouping of people, I'm just going to list a few of these people. Not all of them. I'm not going to bore everyone by reading off the movie listings of all of these people, but just a couple of them, including Ellen Baker, who is the former wife of Rick Baker, who now goes by the name of Alexander. So she worked on Return of the Living Dead 3 from 1993, The Howling 5, The Rebirth from 1989, The Incredible Shrieking Woman from 1981, and even Dunstan Checks In 1996. Doug Beswick, who, according to IMDb, actually, if you go into each of their things, they actually list a bunch of different categories that they actually go into. And according to this, Doug has worked on visual effects on 30 different productions, which, quite funnily, one of the very first ones that he worked on was actually the softcore sort of movie Flesh Gordon from 1974. He worked on Empire Strikes Back from 1980, Terminator 1984, Aliens 1986, and Evil Dead 2 1987. He did makeup on just 2 productions, one being this, obviously, American Werewolf in London, but the other one was actually Star Wars A New Hope. He also did special effects in 10 productions, including The Howling in 1981, Ghostbusters 1984, Nightmare on Elm Street 5, The Dream Child in 1989, and Darkman in 1990. We then have Kevin Brennan, and in the makeup department, he worked on 11 productions, which was The Howling 1981, Videodrome 1983, The Michael Jackson Thriller 1980, 1983 music video, the Ewoks Battle for Endor in 1985, and even Pirates of the Caribbean, Curse of the Black Skrull, Curse of the Black Pearl in 2003 movie. Let me just turn the page. Oh, I shouldn't have done that. Kevin also has listed as working on the special effects of 6 productions, including the TV series from 1989, Monsters, The Birds 2, Land's End in 1994, which is one I've never heard of before, and even the comedy Orgasmo in 1997. And he's also included in the visual effects for Big Trouble in Little China in 1986, and the art department for The Passion of the Christ in 2004. We also have Tom Hester, who is in his listings has special effects of 9 productions, including Cocoon in 1985, Captain EO in 1986, Gremlins 2 The New Batch 1990, Sleepwalkers 1982, and I Am Legend in 2007, and worked in the makeup department of 9 productions, including Videodrome in 1983, Thriller in also 1983, Greystoke, The Legend of Tarzan in 1984, and Starman in 1984. And then for Steve Johnson, we have listed special effects for 35 productions, including Ghost Story from 1981, Predator 1987, Nightmare on Elm Street Part 4, The Dream Masters, and even Stargate, the TV series, where in 1997 to 2006 worked on actually 203 of those episodes. And then for the makeup department has worked on 50 productions, including The Fog from 1980, Solar Babies from 1986, Dead Heat from 1988, Innocent Blood from 1992, Men in Black from 1997, Blade 2 from 2002, and also the TV series of War of the Worlds from 2005. Now, to point out that I said to begin with, this is just a portion of the people that are on this list, but that's just a small example of the amount of work that either these people all work together at some point. A lot of them are part of Rick Baker's crew. I mean, a good like 80% of what is listed in all of their credits are productions that Rick Baker has worked on. So Rick Baker brings a lot of these people to his along with him when he goes to work on different productions and all that, especially the stuff in the early 80s. Obviously, the further along you get, the more advanced these people become and become their own, obviously, well-known names and all that. But it is something that is fantastic to see that just this one small group of these people have gone on to do so much amazing and phenomenal work. Now again, as the credits continue to roll, the song Blue Moon is still playing, obviously, in the background, and actually plays for the complete extension of the actual credits itself, because the credits are timed out to be as long as the actual song itself. So after the 10 seconds that the special effects crew is listed there, we get to get a whole entire scroll of the next line of people in the production for this movie coming up, including such people as like the location manager of Ray Freeborn and the camera operator of David Garath and the clapper loader of Michael Anderson, assistant art directors of Peter Childs and Keith Payne. We got props Brian Payne and Bill Hargreaves. associated editor Simon Battersby, sound editors John Boyner and Don Sharpie.
Special effects provided by Effects Associate Limited.
The lighting was by Lee Electronics Limited. Cameras and lenses by Joe Dutton Limited. And the catering was done by First Unit Caterers Limited.
At this point, we now enter into the musical portion of the credits, where the very first credit is the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra, conducted by Elmer Bernstein.
We then have Blue Moon, performed by Bobby Vinton.
You saw me standing alone.
You saw me standing
without a dream
alone.
In my heart.
Without a dream in my heart. Without a love of my own.
Courtesy of Columbia Records, Blue Moon, performed by Sam Cooke. Courtesy of RCA Records. And finally, to wrap up the minute, we have Moon Dance, performed by Van Morrison.
Well, it's a marvelous night for a moon dance, with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance, neath the cover of October skies.
Courtesy of Warner Brothers Records. When it comes to the cutting room floor, a couple of more facts that I had either omitted or discovered after the fact that I was past that point in the movie, instead of backtracking almost every single step. We're going to list some more of those facts here, including the one where the wolves that were used in the London Zoo scene were kept privately by Roger Palmer in the UK. And they also went on to appear in several TV shows and in advertisements. Roger went on to found the UK Wolf Conservation Trust, which keeps wolves to this day. Griffin Dunn, at one point in 2007 interview, reveals that nobody ever broke character. Nobody even came up to talk to us, like, "Hey kids, how are you liking America?" or any of that kind of stuff. They just looked at us like they were actually cursed. John Landis originally wanted other songs to add to the soundtrack. Cat Stevens wouldn't allow Moonshadow to be, because he had stopped allowing his secular music to be licensed for films following his conversion to Islam. Bob Dylan wouldn't allow his version of Blue Moon to be used in an R-rated film, as he had just begun his brief conversion to Christianity. And Elvis Presley's version of Blue Moon proved unavailable due to ongoing lawsuits involving his estate. John Landis wanted a weird and eerie ambiance for the night shoots. He stated, "So that the wolf howl you hear is actually made up of 9 different sounds, including a wolf,
a lion, a panther, even a locomotive. The other sounds you hear in the first attack on the moors was actually a pig farm recorded from a distance. It was just something to make the audience say, "What the hell was that?" The hospital to which David is brought to at the after being attacked by the werewolf was a disused hospital, Princess Beatrice Hospital in London. The actual room, 21, on the fourth floor. The building is now used as a homeless clinic. Financiers believe that Landis' script was too frightening to be a comedy and too funny to be a horror film. He also, John Landis, stated in an interview his inspiration for the film was the old 1940s horror movie The Wolfman from 1941, starring Lon Chaney Jr., in which usually the werewolf is portrayed as a victim. Films tend to show the transformation from man to wolf through dissolves, but he wanted to capture how painful the entire process would be and make it painful to watch. Although the film did have a lot of comedy, I wanted to treat the violence realistically to make it as terrible as violence always is. Given the transformation had to be realistic, Rick Baker approached it from a scientific point of view. Humans and wolves are both vertebrates, and both mammals. As such, most of the components of the skeleton are very similar to each other. And, quote, "The way that I decided to approach the transformation was through comparative anatomy," he explained to Cineplex. "I didn't have a wolf skeleton in my collection, but I had a dog, and that was close enough. Comparing it to human, you find that many of the bones are similar. It's just the proportions are different. I made a list of the differences, what the major changes were, whether this got shorter or got longer, then figure out how we could get a suit out of this, and the later stages that made sense." David Naughton expressed concern about typecasting, suggesting that he was mostly being offered horror scripts after the movie became a hit. In retrospect, Naughton says that it wasn't much the genre that he was avoiding, quoting, "After the makeup experience, I was so over the whole sitting in a chair for hours on end. And I had worked with the best, or the person who would soon become the top makeup artist, so yeah, I was not in any hurry to go out and do anything related to hours of makeup, prosthetics, any of that business." The reason John Landis filmed in sequence was not done for the benefit of the actors to ease them into the film. It was so that makeup artist Rick Baker could have time to prepare for his gruesome effects that he had to create. Baker, of course, would go on to win his first of 7 Academy Awards for the makeup on this film. The porn theater was written by John Landis in 1968. In 1968, was supposed to be a theater that showed old cartoons. But by the time he shot the film in 1980, the cartoon theater in London was replaced by a porn theater, so he just adapted the script accordingly. John Landis first came up with the story when he was a teenager, which he attributes the romantic subplot to involving a attractive nurse. Stuntman Vic Armstrong played the bus driver who swerves to avoid the werewolf in Piccadilly Circus. A special rear wheel rig was created and used air rams to fire at the set of wheels, positioned 90 degrees from the bus normally, near the axle down into the pavement, lifting up the bus's rear wheels. Wow. to cause a 180-degree skid. Armstrong also drove the car that knocks John Landis through the shop window and performs a head-on collision with another stunt driver's car. Both men driving at 15 miles per hour to minimize the impact, which injured Armstrong's wrist for 3 weeks after forgetting to take his hands off the steering wheel before impact. And on that note, looks like we've come to the end of today's episode of Welcome to the Slaughtered Lamb. I would like at this moment to give a shout out to the podcast hosts that started this whole Movies by Minute phenomenon, Alex Robinson and Pete the Retailer from the Star Wars Minute. There wouldn't be this supportive collective without them. And if you're interested, visit moviesbyminutes.com and check out the ever-growing list of movie podcasts. I'm sure you'll find one of your favorites. And if not, consider joining the horde and making your own. That's why I'm doing this one. On a personal note, if you'd like what you've been hearing and you'd like to help us out, please be sure to share and subscribe. Please leave a review, and if you could be so kind as to please give us a 5-star review, which greatly helps us to get discovered by others searching for this kind of thing. Plus, if you'd really like to help us out, it'd be super great if you could donate to our Ko-Fi listing, where it's ko-fi.com, which is ko-fi.com/planetgeekpod. All support of any amount will be filtered back into improving and expanding on the whole Planet Geek Collective. And if you want to follow this podcast on the social medias, you can always check out Planet Geek Pod, all one word, on Instagram and Twitter. If you would like to go to Facebook and search for Planet Geek, that will bring you to our Facebook page. And you can also send us an email to planetgeekpod@gmail.com. So until next time, remember, keep off the moors, stick to the roads, best of luck.